Welcome back to the Clean Sailors Podcast. Let's talk about sea, marine, sailing, and keeping it clean. I'm your host, Holly, founder of Clean Sailors, and a sailor myself with a passion for the health of our mighty oceans. Through conversations with experts, innovators, and activists, all working towards improving the health of our seas, we're showcasing the people and projects changing the way things are done. Climate change. A phrase we've heard all too much, and increasingly over the last decades. Whether the spread of species into new environments as temperatures change, or the heightened frequency and intensity of storms, whatever your belief system, the tangible impacts of changing climate are increasingly evident and increasingly dramatic. Our polar ice caps are probably the most referred to as a proxy for the alarming temperature changes of our planet. These large sheets of ice, as preserved for millions of years, have been undergoing change, so much so that once impassable and certainly inhospitable areas of our globe are opening up. Today, I'm joined by Ella Hibbert, a sailor who, in just a few short weeks, will slip lines alone for the Arctic Circle, attempting the world's first single-handed, non-stop circumnavigation of the Arctic. But in her own words, this is not a record attempt. It's a wake-up call. Ella, really great to see you.
Thank you for having me.
How does it feel when you hear that played back to you? I appreciate this is an adventure that you've been planning and working on for a couple of years now, but does it hit home at times just about what you're doing and about to achieve?
Yeah, absolutely. It still plays on the emotions quite a bit that, you know, the reality of the situation that we're facing in the Arctic and the fact that so many people are becoming aware of this and getting behind and sort of supporting what I'm trying to showcase. So it's a wonderful feeling that sort of 2 years into planning all this, people are starting to hear what we're trying to put out there as our message and what we're trying to do for the Arctic North, really.
Obviously, coming from Clean Sailors angle, there is, of course, that element of, look, this is an ecosystem which has gone significant and intensive change over a relatively short period of time, right? But there's also that element of, I think, the support, obviously, for you in terms of what you're doing. And one of the questions I'll sort of come to later is also, what turning point between being a crew kind of sailor with a team around you to deciding to do it solo? But I really want to know, first of all, just how you're feeling about the expedition. Obviously, there's a lot of work gone onto your boat. There's a lot of preparation, a hell of a lot of preparation that goes into this. How are you doing right now?
I'm good. I'm just trying to keep things on schedule, which is easier said than done. Like you said, there's loads and loads of work that's already happened and there's still a lot to do. So I'm hoping to have the boat almost completely finished in about 3 weeks' time so that I can start training sails. I mean, when I say training sails, obviously I've owned the boat since 2022 and I'm a sailing instructor, so I'm happy with sort of my sailing skill set, but it's about putting all of the new equipment that we've kitted the boat up with through a bit of a test. So I want to get out into some heavy weather close enough that I can turn tail and come back if something's wrong, rather than my first sort of storm be 600 miles from land in the middle of the North Sea heading for Iceland. You know, so at the moment it's just about trying to stay focused and productive.
And you've got a Roberts 38, right, which is obviously a vessel that excels at offshore sailing. What kind of modifications have you still had to make specific to the passage that you're doing around the Arctic?
So we've converted the bow cabin, which was a really gorgeous double bed that I used to love, into shelving. That's been quite a big change. And equipment-wise, I mean, the boat structurally is made for exactly what I'm trying to do. And I made sure that the surveyor, when I bought her, checked sort of the thickness of the steel was still where it should be and that sort of thing. But the main upgrades have been in the equipment. So she's had a brand new engine, new standing and running rigging. We're getting a hydro vane actually installed today. The water maker's here. There's a water generator arriving. So a lot of the equipment we're trying to put on the boat is to try and showcase that there are sustainable technologies that are good enough nowadays to make it around the world's harshest environment. There's no excuse that they're not on every boat in the Med, the Caribbean and England. It's about fitting the boat out with that sort of equipment and then going out and testing it and making sure that we've done a proper job of the installs and that we're good to go north.
Sorry about like the forecastle, but it's honestly probably the most uncomfortable place to sleep on a longer passage, as I'm sure you'll know. Fine in the marina. I mean, Ella, it's never really about a boat in my experience. It's never just a boat, right? I mean, Yeva's going to be your, you know, your best friend, your home, your comfort, your safety and security. I appreciate she really has been, but this is a different experience, right? So what was it about her in particular that either you were drawn to or have come to appreciate?
I sort of had four requirements for a boat when I set out looking for one to buy. I wanted it to be less than 40 feet. I wanted it to be a ketch. I wanted it to be made of steel. And I wanted it to have a doghouse for interior steering. And funny enough, Yeva wasn't for sale when I found her. And at that point, the two boats closest to me geographically that I found that I liked, one was in Panama and the other one was in Australia, which was really unhelpful.
That's not geographically close.
Yeah, I actually took students from a sailing school to Port St. at Marina, and we ended up docked on the same pontoon that Yeva was on and walked past her on the way to dinner. And just out the corner of my eye, I sort of saw her as we were heading off the dock. And I said to the students, listen, I'll catch you up. I'm just going to have a longer look at this boat here. And I just instantly just was drawn to her. She was in a bit of a state, a bit grimy and torn sort of sail bags, and just looked a bit underworn, but so perfect for what I'd been looking for. So I went to the harbour office and I said, would you give my email address to the owner? And, you know, if he wants to sell, he can reach out. And he did. He reached out the next day. So then we went and had a look at the inside, which I fell in love with, because she's a really pretty boat. She looks a bit like a tank on the outside, but she's just gorgeous. And then the owner told me a number that he wanted for her, which I didn't have in the bank account, because obviously before I got the sponsors that I have and the title partner that I have now, I was working full time to sort of self-fund. And then basically he said that he was going to put her on the market, and I started a crowdfund page. And it was through all of the donations from people supporting that crowdfund page that I managed to put down a 20% deposit on the boat, which was enough to convince him to let me pay him off monthly whilst I continued to work. And then that's, funny enough, how I secured my first ever sponsor, which is Boat Folk, who own Haslam Marina, where she is now. I went to see them at Southampton Boat Show in 2022 and sort of said, listen, I found this boat for this really stupid thing that I'm going to try and do, but I can't afford the boat cost and the mooring fees. Would you be interested in sponsoring a berth for the boat? At this point, I hadn't bought her yet. So they said, you know, we can't offer you a berth for a boat you don't have. And I said, I can't get the boat if you don't give me a berth. So they said, as long as you don't mind in which marina you end up, we'll find somewhere for you. And that all just fell into place so incredibly that by December 2022, I owned Yeva. She was in Haslam Marina. And then I had a very generous donation, well, an anonymous donation, essentially, that allowed me to pay off the rest of the boat in one go. So that was quite an emotional day, because the owner had taken such a leap of faith on knowing that I'd get him the money somehow.
I don't think it was just me, but when I say it's not just a boat, right, you get that feeling.
Absolutely. And I keep talking about her like we're a team. So I keep saying we're going to the Arctic, and people are like, I thought you were going alone. I just say, yeah, me and the boat.
I really get it. I got sailing my grandfather's boat in Italy, and I can't describe it. Like, if crossing, say, the Biscay or otherwise, you just feel it is like you're being looked after by something that's so alive and so animated. You have actually trust in her, like she's a person. I can't quite.
Yeah, and you get to know every sort of noise and squeak or sound that she makes. And the second you hear something that's unusual for that vessel, you pick it up straight away. So you become quite in tune to the boat, for sure.
I mean, double handing is one thing, but obviously solo is another. I mean, on that point, Ella, you've obviously been a sailing instructor for a while. So you're very, very versed at crewing and being with others and in teams and leading teams, etc. So why alone? What was it about going this alone that was really important to you?
There's a few different reasons why. First off, I think it helps maybe highlight what we're trying to show about the fact that if I can make the full circumnavigation by myself, then it's just testament to how quickly we are losing the sea ice and how less sort of perilous of an area of navigation the Arctic has become. And then there's also that sort of personal goal. I mean, seeing the Arctic with my own two eyes has been something I've dreamed about since I was little. And the more I got into sailing, the more I started putting those two things together. And there's that sort of challenge to it that I think I'm just excited about putting myself through. Like you said, I've spent a long time looking after teams on boats and looking after, you know, running a competent crew course with people that have never even seen a boat before. I know that if I can keep five other lives at sea safe, I can look after myself. But I want to experience that challenge of the sleep deprivation and the mental fortitude that I'm going to need to carry into this to get out the other side. And it's something that a lot of people think I'm a bit nuts for wanting to experience, but it's one of the biggest challenges I'm looking the most forward to, actually.
I think it's one of the most honest answers I've heard, on the basis that actually it has to be very much about almost the ugly and the tough side of it that is almost why you've got to do it, to prove to yourself in some ways that it can be done. I mean, you appreciate that it's not necessarily a small feat. Obviously, you've chosen, I say, the Arctic. You could have solo sailed anywhere. But what is it, you mentioned you've been interested about it since you were sort of younger, but what draws you to this environment and then specifically to sail it?
I think part of what fascinates me the most about the Arctic is how it's perceived as this place that's so otherworldly and foreign and harsh and extreme. But
there's that reality that actually it is fundamental to the survival of the rest of the world as well. And it's a place that has just always fascinated me, and its harshness, its environment, its inhabitants and animal life, you know, being able to see bears or the various whales that live up there. It's just an area that I want to try and bridge the gap between how people perceive the Arctic as this sort of faraway foreign place that has no impact on us, and get people to realize just how intricately linked the survival of the Arctic is to our survival as well. So that fascination has been steadily growing for quite a few years now.
There's something we really can't underestimate. I think, you know, I mentioned at the beginning that obviously the polar ice caps are something that we really discuss as a proxy for the changing climate, but there's a really, really good reason why. And as you mentioned, these are the world's refrigerators, in a sense. They're keeping us moderate temperature. They're helping, obviously, reflect sunlight back out into space. Obviously, the sort of weather system and the vortexes created there help to moderate also our weather systems. So really can't underestimate. It's not just about, I mean, obviously going to the Arctic and sort of witnessing it firsthand, but I think there's an element also, which is this hasn't really been done before, solo circumnavigation nonstop, which is what you're going to be attempting and achieving. But the reason being that obviously it has been so impassable. So already there enough ice has melted that this is actually an option for you to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Russian Hydromet Office, for example, have confirmed that my estimated dates to be crossing the Kara and the Laptev seas have been navigable in September for the last 10 years in a row, which is just an insane fact. Scientists are estimating now that the Arctic could be entirely ice-free in the summer as early as 2045, which means that I could do this circumnavigation around the ice this year. And before I'm 50, I could sail a straight line from Scotland to China across the top of the world, which wow. is just really quite harrowing sort of information and data that we're looking at, and obviously what we're going up there to try and highlight and showcase.
What a powerful, impacting, actually gave me slightly goosebumps that you could sail directly from Scotland to China in a straight line. That's something, isn't it?
It's just insane. When you stop and let that info sink in, it really does hit home, I find.
To your point, there are estimations, quite severe estimations, that obviously the Arctic could be ice-free by the 2040s, early 2040s. But we are losing, so Arctic sea ice at around 13% a decade, I think, and over the last 30 years, the oldest and thickest ice in the Arctic. So this is the stuff that's really been building up for a hell of a long time. It's been declining by about 95%, which is astounding, isn't it? And I appreciate that these figures sound like figures. They sound a lot, but I think probably the best analogy is literally what you said around there being nothing in your way between our side of the globe and the other. Obviously, a journey which previously has taken, whether by plane or otherwise, a very, very long time to get to, being able to hop over the top of the planet is just astounding.
Absolutely. And it's part of the reason that more commercial shipping traffic is moving into the Arctic. You know, there's more oil and gas drilling moving in, the more accessible it becomes. There's more container ships and cruise ships trying to find their way through the Northwest and the Northeast passages. And the more ships that do get up there, because of the less sea ice extent, then the less ice there is because of the more damage caused. And it's just this perpetual sort of cycle that's going to keep snowballing unless regulations get changed and we start doing something about it. So one of the charities that I'm supporting by auctioning Yeva when I get back from the end of the circumnav is a charity called Ocean Conservancy. And they have an Arctic program where essentially they're trying to get the people who make decisions for the countries based around the Arctic. So one of the problems, to backtrack on that slightly, is that the Arctic Ocean hasn't got a governing body. So any country with a water line that's bordering the Arctic waters can essentially do whatever they like. And part of what Ocean Conservancy are trying to do is get them to all sit around the table together and make areas that are nature reserves, nature protection zones, places that we can't set up oil and gas drilling, making sure that any ships that are going up there have appropriate oil spill kits and fuel spill kits to be able to be self-manageable if something goes wrong and they do start letting oil or fuel out into the water, because it's the response times for that sort of emergency up there are so slow. That's one of the things I feel quite passionately that the Ocean Conservancy are working hard to achieve.
An incredible effort and a very, very important point given international maritime law. who does look after the Arctic. And to that degree, even if we did have legislation and otherwise, it's such a remote area traditionally and such an undesirable area for so many other than, say, shipping and now increasingly tourism, that policing it is also another element of it. So whilst we can legislate, I think obviously the point very much with your passage is drawing on the education and the inspiration as to why it's so important that we do it and that we do it really well.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of the education side of things. So I've been giving a lot of talks at yacht clubs. I've gone to a school where I grew up in the south of France and chatted to all the different kids and the different age groups out there about it. And yeah, we're working with the International Seakeeper Society to do a microplastics study whilst I'm heading up there around the Arctic, so that NOC, the National Oceanographic Centre in Southampton, can use that to further their research. And obviously the campaign's been endorsed by the Scientific Exploration Society now, so there is that element of education and research that we're really trying to bring into this as well, rather than focusing on the fact that it'll be the first time it's been done.
And I think there's an element of, you know, had you done this passage in many other places, then the sort of responsibility could only have been on yourself to do your sort of personal goal and achievement. Because of the environment that you've chosen, there's a lot of opportunity, as you've rightly pointed out and undertaken, to do the research whilst you're going around and obviously reporting what you're seeing. So not only is it an attempt at circumnavigating something that has never been possible solo and non-stop, potentially also obviously the world record, although that may not be your first goal, but also as a scientific expedition in its own right. So it's really quite an incredible passage for a variety of reasons.
Thank you. I mean, part of me hopes almost that I don't make it the whole way around. You know, to set this record, to be the first person to solo circumnavigate the Arctic Circle will be one of the most bittersweet things I think I could ever imagine doing. So there is that hope that maybe there is enough sea ice that we might have to winter the boat over somewhere and do it over two seasons. But from the research that I've done and the Hydromet officers that I've spoken to and the other sailors I've spoken to that have been through the Northwest and Northeast passages, it does look highly likely that I will actually pull it off in a single season.
That's really something, isn't it? And just going back to your, where does it all start for you? I mean, you're here in your mid to late 20s and you're about to do something that has actually never been done before, although various attempts, and I think the closest that anyone has come to it has obviously been double-handed, and obviously there's been stops and stuff along the way. But where did it all start for you? Where was your first experience of even the water?
We lived in Suffolk for a short while when I was a kid. So dad was military. So I was born in Germany and then we moved to England when I was 3 and we left England and moved to France when I was 9. But between the ages of about 5 and 9, as a way of keeping me out of trouble and occupied on school holidays, mum and dad used to chuck me in Optimists and lasers on a reservoir up in Ipswich. But that's where it really started. And then when we moved to France, dad had a Moody that we used to sail sort of Marseille to Corsica on and do that as summer holidays as a family. And then I gave up sailing for a really long time to pursue my other passion, which is horse riding. I started riding horses as a young kid as well, and by the time I was in my early teens, I was doing quite well at that. So I left home at 18 after I finished school and went to Australia and ended up managing a racing stables out in Australia. And then I came back to Europe and I went to Germany to work for an Olympic dressage rider. Eventually, an injury caught up with me, basically, and I went to find my way back to boats. I went on to super yachts as a deckhand and a dive master. And the more I got into diving and the more of the sort of world's oceans that I saw, the less in tune with super yachts I felt, and basically just felt like I didn't belong in that side of the industry at all, and disagreed with a lot of the practices that I was seeing there. So that's when I sort of took a leap of faith and took all my savings and put myself through a fast track competent crew to yachtmaster offshore course, and really just rekindled my passion for sailing. So about 2 months after I finished the yachtmaster offshore course, I did the cruising instructor course in England, got hired the evening that I passed that, and basically never left the school that I'd come here to do that on. And then a year later was the RYA's second youngest female yachtmaster instructor, and I couldn't picture myself doing anything that's not boat or ocean related now. So this is me for life. We'll see what comes after the Arctic, but it will definitely be something to do with boats still.
I think for most people, the Arctic, just do that. That's such an achievement. It's like even preparing for that kind of, you know, element is such an achievement. You've done a hell of a lot to date. And, you know, in some ways, sorry about the horse riding and the injury, etc. But it clearly is something that has seemed to open up relatively seamlessly. I'm not saying easily at all. And I appreciate the challenge and the journey and the work that you've been through and obviously still going through in order to prepare this before the hard work of the passage even starts. But it really, even just listening to you, it sounds like this is really where you are supposed to be, hey?
I feel so as well. And, you know, I keep thinking to myself that the passage isn't going to be the hard part. It's all of this sort of prep and planning and the last 2 years trying to get the sponsors. And I only landed my title partner for funding the expedition and helping me with the marketing side of things and social medias in January of this year. So I was very, very close to basically telling all of the sponsors that I'd gotten on board over the last couple of years that we'd have to postpone to next year because of the shortness of the timeline of not having the funding and that backing that I really needed. And then my fairy godfather, as I call him, one of the co-founders of a company called Capital.com, said that Capital.com would like to come on board as my title partner. And that was a game changer. So now it's a fight for trying to get everything done in the timeframe that we're working with to be able to leave this year. And then there's, you know, the usual visas and permits and that sort of thing. So I'm waiting to hear back on my visa from Russia, which I've applied for. Kind of wanted to apply for that one first because I thought if I didn't get it, there's not a lot of point having visas for all the other countries set up, which are going to be easier processes to go through. So I applied for that about 2 weeks ago and they said I'd hear back in 3 to 3.5 weeks. They basically said no news is good news. So if I don't hear anything, I can assume that I'm getting the visa and I haven't heard anything yet. So fingers crossed, my passport should be back with me in a week or a week and a half with a merry little stamp in it.
Absolutely. You're so close. Ellie, you've obviously had lots of experience in various different elements of the industry, such as super yachts, as you mentioned. How has that experience helped inform the way you're going to conduct your own boat? You mentioned some of the products and equipment that you've put on Yeva in preparation for this Arctic passage, whether it's because of that environment specifically or just an opportunity to help lessen, you know, the boat's pollution on our waters. How have you kind of approached your victualling and equipment planning?
Yeah, it's a bit of both of what you just said, but essentially I'm approaching everything with safety for myself first and then safety for the environment second as my top two reasons for doing anything that we're doing to Yeva. So food wise, I'm predominantly going to be living off of freeze-dried food that you rehydrate and pastas essentially. And the waste out of that is all relatively small. So I can carry the waste with me on the boat in a large space that I've got in the bottom of the cockpit where the steering cables run is essentially going to become the trash store. The water maker that we've put on the boat is so that we can avoid taking tens of thousands of liters of plastic bottles essentially with us. And then there's the products that you guys are going to be supplying from Clean Sailors, which are sort of sustainable, eco-friendly products, which I'm super excited about. And it's just about minimizing our impact on the environment, all the way down to the bilges of the boat, if you like. So I've got a sponsor called Wave International, who create these filters for your bilge water system on the boat. And it's a filter that sits in the pipe between where the bilge pump starts pushing water up into the pipes and where the pipe lets it go overboard. And this filter will catch microplastics and microfibers and anything at all that might make its way down there. Bearing in mind that Yeva's got floorboards with thermal insulation and carpet. Obviously there's fibers around there that I don't want going outside of the boat. So yeah, right down to the bilges, basically everything's been about my safety and the environment safety as much as we can do to lessen both of our impact, mine and the boat, on where we're going.
How difficult or expensive or inexpensive did you find pulling all that stuff together?
The filter for the filtration system was really, really simple, actually. It's just a case of cutting the bilge pipe, if you like, into two sections and you slot the filter in the middle and just a couple of Jubilee clips and you're good to go. So that was a change that I had never seen one on a boat before until Wave approached me about putting one on Yeva. And it's so clever and such a small little unit that I really do think there's room for those to be on a lot more pleasure and commercial crafts than what I have them currently.
Especially when, I appreciate it doesn't help necessarily Blackwater, but certainly where, you know, holding tanks, etc., in the UK in particular are not so prolific. Obviously, greywater is one of those things where anything we put down our drains, as you all know, on our boat goes into the sea. But it sounds, I think, one of the things that we often hear, certainly through Clean Sailors, is that it's expensive or I don't know where to find the products. But it's always great to hear that you've done very objectively and very independently, been able to find some solutions that can help mitigate your impact whilst you're out there. Ella, I appreciate you have got a few more jobs to do on your boat before you depart.
My electrician sat in the cockpit waiting for me.
Dear electrician, thank you for your patience. But sincerely, it's just great to chat more about your adventure. I'm really, really excited for you. And I'm sure I share the sentiment with many that we're very much looking forward to your final weeks of prep and obviously then your departure. But Ella, all the very best. And as again,
thank you so much.
Your own words again, that this isn't a record attempt, it's a wake-up call. And if you had one message for sailors, ocean lovers, or actually anybody listening, what would it be?
I think just to try and minimise our impact is really the best thing that we can be doing as sailors to protect the environment that, you know, we enjoy so much. So look at your boats, look at your systems, see if there's anything that can be swapped for more sustainable technologies, or grab yourself one of these bilge filter sort of systems and just try and take care of the environment that we all love to enjoy together.
Ella, soon to be world first single-handed non-stop circumnavigator of the Arctic Circle and ocean-minded human being. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Clean Sailors podcast. All relevant links to the projects and people we talk to can be found with the podcast link. For all episodes or to get in touch, just visit cleansailors.com. We love to hear from you. We believe that great ideas should be shared, which is why our podcast is free to appear on. So if you've got a project, idea, or topic you think we should be discussing, get in touch. In the meantime, thank you for listening and see you for the next episode.